Hi, I'm Z.
Hey, Z.
I am an alcoholic, a compulsive eater, and codependent. And I've done the work as it's laid out in this big book of Alcoholics Anonymous with three very loving patient sponsors and a wonderful God. And I have done some of my amends. I'm willing to do them all. And I live in steps 9, 10, 11, 12 to the extent that I ask God each day to help me. And just by that statement, you can probably tell I have a little problem with self and self-sufficiency and all that good stuff, because it certainly ran my life for many years. And I have to share something with you that happened last night at my house. Edith isn't here because she's looking after her great niece, who's staying with us for about 4 days. And she said to Edith when they were getting ready to go to bed, she says, "It's really great to be me." And isn't that wonderful at 4 or 5 years old? Mm-hmm. And I can truly say now, today, after doing this work, it's great to be me. So, I mean, it might have taken a long time, but I finally got that. And step three, you know, when I originally took step three, I thought it was just about the prayer. And then I thought that once I got some more of it, and I thought I had it. And every time I go to this chapter, step three, so much more comes out. It keeps on giving, is all I can say. Starting on page 60, the first thing that really jumped out at me once I was actually almost through with my fourth step and kind of helped me get through my fourth step is a lot of this stuff, I need to personalize it to me, put in an I, because when they have we or you, it's all of y'all, it's not me. And, you know, I know my motives, and my motives are good, so I'm not that selfish person that's doing all that stuff. You may do it, and it's okay, and I still love you anyway, but, you know, that wasn't me as I saw it. But the first big thing that changed was when I changed C, that God can and will. And I usually say, if I seek him. Because he's not going to come knocking down my door. And for a long time, I believed he could for you. But I wasn't sure he would for me. That he would, you know, because I was really bad. So being convinced we were at step three, and we decided to turn our will and our life over to the care of God as one we understand him. What do we mean by that, and what did we do? Well, the first thing we do is the first requirement is that we be convinced that any life run on self-will can hardly be successful. So that was the first thing I had to do. And believe me, I did not do that before I took step three and started trying to write my fourth step. And when I can't do that, let me read some more in just the I form. On the basis that I am always in collision with something or someone, even if my motives are good, most people, meaning me, I tried to live by self-propulsion. I was like an actor who wanted to run the show, and it was forever trying to arrange the lights, the ballet, the scenery, and the rest of the players in my own way. And I didn't have to be a star in this play. I certainly wasn't the director. And in some cases, I wasn't even an actor. I was probably somebody in the front row or something that wanted to give them some instructions on how to straighten it out. But needless to say, the arrangements didn't stay put, and people wouldn't do what I wish. The show would be great if they just did, but everyone, including me, would be pleased. Life would be wonderful. In trying to make these arrangements, I might sometimes be quite virtuous. I might be kind, considerate, patient, generous. That's how I thought of myself, modest and self-sacrificing. On the other hand, I could be mean, selfish, dishonest. As with most humans, I was more likely to have varied traits. And I really couldn't accept that, you know, the last thing in the world that I wanted to be is mean, egotistical, selfish, or dishonest. And looking at some of those words is really powerful to me too, especially the egotistical. I would never have thought I was egotistical until I found out that it's not how great you think you are, but it's how much you think of yourself, how much the thoughts are on you, and how you're going to, you know, manage life to feel the least pain possible. You know, that's what makes me egotistical, because at much of my life, I was so wrapped up in my head running these terrible things that I fantasized about myself and about other people. They weren't real. They were stories I told myself. From a very early age, I told myself stories to comfort myself. So what usually happens, the show does not come off very well. I began to think life did not treat me right. I decided to exert myself even more. I went on a quest of getting, knowledge, you know, going to school, getting degrees. That was how I was going to make it in this world. When I was exerting myself, on another occasion, I might be demanding or gracious. People in my life were certainly confused. I was certainly confusing them and wasn't creating harmony because they never knew how I was going to act. I might act one way with you because I knew if I really flattered you, you might do what I wanted you to do. Or if on another occasion, and I think of this when I was a manager, and I would know certain employees how I could get them to do things. But that's how I really did my whole life. There were some employees you really had to lay down the law, you know, do it or else. And that's how I, and it also created a disharmony in myself, because when I was trying to figure out how to give you what you needed to do what I wanted, I wasn't being true to myself, because I didn't really know how I felt about anybody or anything. But was I not a self-seeker even when trying to be kind? Was I not a victim of the delusion that I could wrest satisfaction and happiness out of this world if I only managed well? And wrest, in the old dictionary, it says to remove by force. So I was trying to take what I wanted from this world by force. And so, of course, it didn't go well. Is he not in his best moments? Am I not in my best moments a producer of confusion rather than harmony? I confuse myself and everyone around me. And the actor is self-centered and egocentric. And also, I've heard the dictionary definition of that self-centeredness and egotistical. It's how a belief system that people had back in the 30s, that, they had a way of looking at the world, and we have to change that way in order to really be able to let God direct us in our lives. And so we had to kind of get rid of that. Because otherwise we're sitting around, you know, lolling in the sun and just complaining about everything. And it certainly doesn't have to be politics, the weather, or anything else. It's just that nothing seemed right because of that that actor wanting it to be different. And for as long as I can remember, I wanted things to be different. I wanted it to be great for everybody, but I just wanted it to be different. And we were driven, all this was caused by and driven by 100 forms of fear. And I didn't realize, number one, I was doing it. And then when I started seeing I was doing it, I certainly didn't think that it was 100 forms of fear, self-delusion, self-seeking, self-pity. Because I really couldn't see myself because of all those stories. I was delusional. So I didn't know what the world was all about. But I did know, even when I was taking this third step prayer, that my troubles were basically of my own making. Invariably, I could be not drinking, not eating, any of that kind of stuff, until a self-imposed crisis would come along. And that self-imposed crisis was so uncomfortable that it would drive me to do one of my addictions, just to where I could feel normal. There seems no way of getting rid of self without God's aid. And I had to really, one of the things that I try to practice doing, and someone told me a neat way to do it, is first we had to quit playing God. It didn't work. And I have to quit playing God every day. And this lady that I know, when she was speaking, she said that she heard another person say it. So, and she started using it, I started using it too. When I roll out of bed in the morning, I say, God, I'm reporting for duty. And that just, that sets it right there. It reminds me that I'm not the one in charge. That if I'm going to get anything done today, it doesn't matter whether it's cleaning my room or going to the grocery store. It seems like I have to have this little conversation with God. And before I was to this side of the work and everything, these voices in my head would talk to me all the time. And now, I think I mentioned it last week, that my mother and my grandmother walked around all day long talking to God. So, you know, I admit that I internalize it rather than saying it out loud most of the time now. But I have that, and that is really so wonderful that, you know, it may be I walk out and see the sunshiny day, and thank you, God. And particularly with gratitude, I say it out loud. But I have to stop playing God. And the next thing we have to do is we have to decide that in this drama of life, we were going to let God be our director. He is the principal, and I am his agent. He is God, and I am one of his children. Most good ideas are simple, and this concept is the keystone to the new and triumphant arch through which we pass to freedom. And I really do truly believe I have freedom today. And I think that's where it says agent, but I'll get to that in a minute on the next one. And I think this is the only place in the book where we get the promises before the prayer. It seems like most of the time we get the prayer and then the promise. Because the next paragraph on 63, this is what God, the power, is going to do for me. When I sincerely took such a position, all sorts of remarkable things followed. I had a new employer. Being all-powerful, he provided what I needed. If I kept close to him and performed his work well, and established on such a footing, I became less and less interested in myself, my little plans and designs. And more, I became interested in seeing what I could contribute to life. As I felt a new power flow in, I started to really enjoy peace of mind. As I discovered I could face life successfully. As I became conscious of his presence, and I began to lose my fear of today, tomorrow, and the hereafter, I was reborn. And I truly feel like I am reborn today. And then we get to the third step. And I always have to kid about the third step because I thought I'd memorized it and I'd left out the sentence about relieve me of the bondage of self. And I had, you know, made better do that will, but just left out that part. And I shared last week, I think, that when I was saying my prayer last Sunday morning, I said, relieve me of the burden of self. And that was like another little lesson coming from God, that that I am so much freer today when I don't have to live in that fear of here, today, and tomorrow. I'm really living in the present now. And so much of my life, I lived in fearing what was going to happen tomorrow and replaying everything that happened up to this point in my life. And where did I go wrong? And what could I do to go back and fix it? And I think that's part of the freedom, too. That the freedom that at 74 years old, I'm really free. That it doesn't matter. It doesn't mean that every day is wonderful. And I had some little challenges last week. And it didn't mean that, that you know, it was all wonderful. But it was a wonderful time. And I had my 97-year-old uncle passed away on Wednesday. And it's really, it was kind of like God put it, because one of the first things I thought of, well, maybe I should call and cancel. And I said, nope, God didn't say that. But God had already started putting things in place. I was supposed to speak Thursday night. Wednesday morning, someone called and asked to switch with me before I knew about the funeral and everything. So it was just perfectly opened up. Everything that was an obstacle in me speaking today and me going to that funeral just disappeared. And it may be little small things like that, but I still think those are little, you know, little God winks, as some people like to call them. And I was also reminded at the funeral, I had talked before about my mother and my grandmother and how both spiritual and religious they were. But this was a man, 97 years old, that every day of his life at 9 o'clock at night, he turned off the TV and he had Bible devotion with his family. My cousin said nothing made them miss that. 9 o'clock, it was automatic. And I had known that before, but I just kind of forgot it. And he was a man who truly lived all of this. I mean, he was at church at least 3 times a week, and he didn't leave it just in church. He carried it around with him. He was always helping someone, but never making a big deal out of it. He was just, you know, helping his fellows, as God wants us to do. He prayed a lot, and when things would come up, he would just take a step back. And I later found out, didn't know it when I was a kid, that he was just taking it to God just for a minute. If he'd hit his thumb or something like that, he never would say anything bad. It was like just this little pause, and then he'd go on with everything. And he was just a wonderful man, and I was very blessed. I'm so blessed with my family. And it's amazing to me that I meet these people now that I had all these resentments against. And they're just as happy and friendly to see me as anything. And, you know, all of that other stuff was just in my brain. So it was just a real testimony of how far I've come. So, but it just keeps getting better. It just keeps getting better. I feel like those promises have come true for me. But as I said, I just feel like it keeps getting better. And that it also reminds us that it's not about liquor, it's not about food, and it's not about people. It's about my relationship with God. Here I'm preaching again. It's about my relationship with my higher power, and that makes it different now. That's what's made it different. Nothing else has changed for the most part, but then everything has changed. So I think that's all I have. So I'm going to close there. Thank you all.
Thank you.